Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Courage Conversation Show. I'm your host, Ashley Easter. I am the founder and executive director of Courage 365, and we have an amazing show planned for you today. We are going to be talking with author and advocate Shirley Fessel. Shirley and I have been running into each other on the online space for a couple years now. And when I knew she was interested in being on the show, I was like, yes, this is going to be amazing. So before we bring her on, I want to just do a real quick read of her bio. She can tell you more about herself after that, but just to give you a little bit of foundation of who Shirley is. So Shirley Fessel uncovered religious abuse before it was talked about. Raised Catholic, she left and married a Baptist minister with whom she had three children. He became abusive, and she spent 10 years accepting the blame, 5 years trying to help him, and 3 years getting out. During that time, she earned an advanced degree in counseling and communication. She published the process she used to strengthen in a place of her workbook called Redemption from Biblical Battering. And I'm sure we'll talk more about her book later. It is a self-help workbook for current victims. The endorsed workbook clarifies 7 levels of confusion and provides 5 tools for a woman in a religious domestic violence situation. All right, so now that you have a little taste of who Shirley is, let me welcome her onto the show. Hey, Shirley, welcome to Courage Conversations.
Hey, Ashley, thank you so much.
Hey, I love the part where you said you've been uncovering abuse before people were really talking about it. You have been doing this for years, and with the Me Too movement and the Church Too movement, we've gained a lot of traction over the years, but it's really been something that you've been discussing before the press and media was interested in it at all. So I just want to honor you for the legacy that you have created. It's truly amazing.
Thank you, Ashley. And I am so encouraged by so many women now involved and doing all kinds of great work. I've just been thrilled to connect with them.
Absolutely.
They're carrying the torch, and you're one of them.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Now, Shirley, you focus on helping women escape or recover from religious domestic violence and abuse. And I was wondering, can you give us an overview of what motivated you to start doing that work?
When I was in the situation, as you excellently reviewed the history, I always had a strong relationship with Christ. And I realized more and more that this relationship I was in was against my maintaining any kind of relationship with the Christ within. And when I discovered Your Courage 365, that's such a great title because that's what it is, finding the courage every day to fight these attacks and get out. But how? Because the social supports weren't there, they're still not there. The shelters are being attacked in some states, but the religious abuse, violent or not, is so sinister and subtle. But the institutional churches and the people in it that the woman thinks should help her are not there. I certainly experienced that as a minister's wife. They're always going to side with the man in that situation. So you're left entirely frozen out. And you have to invent ways to reclaim yourself, and if you have children especially, to get them out of this horrible abuse that they're seeing, and it's affecting them every day. Just an example, my husband slept with a rifle under the bed. I could see that my oldest child, my son, anger was building more and more. Now, am I going to risk my son getting involved in perhaps violent action against his father to protect me and then suffer the consequences of that? No. Women are taught to submit and they feel like they won't have to have responsibility, but you do have responsibility. You're going to be in the situation, and the legal system is going to look at you. So you are responsible for your choices. Not to make a decision is to make a decision. So I decided to put down as a path, a clear path for women who are subject to these confusing double binds, misuse of faith concepts, manipulation, Darbo, all of these tactics that are used, gaslighting, whatever. It's so confusing and you have no support. So I decided to put it down in a workbook. At the time I did the workbook, there weren't any workbooks. I think there's about three or four now, which is great. But she can use this in her privacy to work through her confusion. And the reason I wanted to speak with you and your group today is to go over how this process benefited me in three ways. One was strengthening me in place, allowing me to leave without guilt. I see so many believing women, they may get out because of life-threatening situations, but they have tremendous guilt. And it's hard enough to rebuild if you're carrying that guilt. So I left with no guilt. I knew I not only had I done 550%, but it was God's will for me to leave. It was not God's will. I was obeying God by leaving. This is a concept that not easily come across. Secondly, I was able to avoid re-entanglement. So many women at their vulnerable state when they leave or get involved again with another abuser, they then feel totally incompetent, which is not helpful. So this process that I went through, and you can see in the workbook, helps you avoid those because you know right away the minute you meet them to avoid them because you know the signs. And at that time, there was no such thing as red flags. They're really red banners, but if you don't know what they are, it's hard to see them. And then thirdly, I am so pleased with your emphasis on intuition. The organized church does not encourage women to listen to their intuition, to listen to their gut. And for me, that's the Holy Spirit within you. That's the link. That's the connection to God. And if you, I always suffered if I didn't listen to my gut. If I didn't follow my gut, it was not going to turn out well. If I made decisions out of fear rather than faith, it was not going to turn out well. So this process helped me honor myself, and your work is helping women honor their intuition, the voice of the Holy Spirit in them, to help them navigate the attacks.
Wow. I can definitely see just how important your work is. And to know that you were able to escape an environment like this and learn from the confusion you had. I have some questions a little bit further down in the interview about the different types of confusion that are out there. And so I definitely want to get into that in a few minutes. And I think it's helpful because some of our audience is Christian, some of our audience is not Christian. And so we have different guest speakers who speak from their personal language and worldviews. And I think it's really helpful for people to know that whether they call it the Holy Spirit, whether they call it intuition, to trust yourself, trust that voice within. And the language matters a little less than like just pay attention. I always tell people, I don't care what you call it, just listen to it, listen to that
Right.
voice. It's going to keep you safe.
It's a life force. It's a life force, whatever you want to call it. Energy, universal spirit, it doesn't matter. It's your ace. It's your ace.
Absolutely, 100%. And I love that that's part of what you have been teaching people for a long time as well. So, my next question is, how does religious domestic violence, which has been your focus, how does that differ from secular domestic violence? And, like, what are some of the signs to look out for? Obviously, there's overlaps, but it seems like there are some differences for sure. And I'd love to hear about that from you.
It's really sinister and it's deeper because, in addition to all the horrible things that a woman goes through in regular domestic abuse, on that, overlaid on that, you have the idea that this is God wanting you to do this. I actually had a client tell me she was going to stay in the marriage because she'd rather suffer hell here than suffer hell for eternity by divorcing. You see that kind of number on the head. It's not just her, it's her soul. And I'd almost go so far as to say, calling evil good and saying it's God's will is very close to what Bible people say is the blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. That is the most sacred part of a human being, is their soul and spirit. And it just blows my mind. So it's extremely difficult to sort through that when you have authorities and your people in the church and so many people not wanting to touch this with a 10-foot pole. It's hard for therapists and shelters to touch it because, number one, shelters are supported by many churches. Number two, therapists don't want to infringe upon religious freedom, which we have in this country as a sacred right. And so it's a difficult topic to approach. And women in the church are told, don't go to a counselor because they're going to work against your faith. Come to us. We have the Christian counselors who are not qualified. And all they're going to do is quote more Bible, quote more Bible. And the idea is if you just love more, believe more, pray more, go to more church, go to more Bible studies, go to more prayer, it's going to work out. The entire system, however, I didn't realize till later, is just built to maintain male authority over women. That's it. And to keep men from having to have accountability for their deeds. So instead of being a solace and resource of comfort for the woman, it's actually colluding with the abuse and using the Bible and faith to club her over the head. And that is why the title Biblical Battering was adopted by the Christians for Biblical Equality, because they're using the Bible basically to beat you up. It's a lot harder because of that intense layer inside the spirit of the woman. And the techniques are so subtle, they're bad enough in regular abuse, but the techniques are just really sophisticated when they're in religion. And you, as a cult survivor, know how very difficult it is to sort out.
Absolutely. Yeah, that really answers the question. And it's one of those things where, like you said, abuse is bad enough when you're thinking about it affecting your life here and now. But then when you add the layer of having a belief in an eternity and perhaps, like you said, going to hell or having some punishment in the afterlife, like that compounds the fear and the ability to control. And most people don't want to live their life feeling like they're going against God if they're a person of faith. And so, if these leaders that they've been told to trust are telling them that by leaving a dangerous environment, you're going against God, that's going to make someone extra hesitant. It's not just their family maybe not liking it or their friends or church. It's like them manipulating the name of God and saying, if you leave, God is going to be angry at you. And that's just such a weightier thing. And so that makes a lot of sense. Again, the actions happening in the home can be very similar, but that weighted why you're staying and the explanations of why the abuse is quote unquote okay when it's entangled with a faith view that can really be extra damaging. So thank you for sharing about that. And in your book, you talk about these seven levels of confusion. You mentioned that kind of in the beginning, and I'm wondering if that kind of flows into sort of the biblical battery idea of if any of those confusion pieces overlay into that religious language being used, and maybe not, but it seems like those would be a piece of the confusion. And so I'm just wondering if you could share a little bit more about the confusion that women experience in these environments.
And you made a good point. It doesn't have to be in a religious context. Any abstract system of beliefs can be used this way. Any manipulator, sociopath, whatever, can use abstract concepts to manipulate because they are abstract and they're not clear. So they can be used. However, the book deals with this a great deal. The major faith concepts that are misused are forgiveness, sacrifice, submission or obedience, suffering, serving, not leaning to your own understanding. There's a Bible verse for everything, but there's also a Bible verse on the other side of the aisle. So my ex-husband would say, "You don't have a right to quote any Bible verses to me. I'm your Lord. I stand in the place of God." And here's he's a minister telling me I don't have a right to use Bible verses because he didn't want to hear what it said about what he was doing. So it's only certain Bible verses. And by selecting these certain ones and having no clear understanding of what this means is what's damaging when faith is used to inflict pain. And of course, as you say, God gets to be a scapegoat. Men using the name of God don't have any accountability because they can always say, "God told me."
Absolutely, absolutely. And now, are those all the levels of confusion you talk about in the book, or is that kind of separate or addition to those levels of confusion?
No, each chapter will discuss a level of confusion. It will discuss the faith concepts that are under it that are confused and try to clarify those. It will have an exercise to help you sort out things in your mind and heart. And it will have a tool of strength for you to start practicing.
Wow.
So the first level, of course, is that you don't know you're being abused. I had to call a hotline and tell them what was happening and ask them, "Is this abuse?" That's how far down you get because you've been under attack for years, many times, of someone constantly chipping away at your self-esteem and your sense of worth. So you're pretty demoralized. People think that battered women are weak. No, they're extremely strong. You're just seeing them after prolonged attacks every day. And they're still alive. That's the strength. They're still alive. Living with people who should be jailed, basically, in some cases. So the first level is, am I being abused? The second level is, I know I'm being abused, but perhaps I deserve it. Third, I don't deserve it, but maybe it's God's will. Fourth, I don't know that it's God's will, but maybe I can help him. How many women have been told it's your job to save your husband? You can save him. Pray, pray, you can save him. All of this works to keep the woman in bondage, no matter what. The bottom line's the same. Keep her there. Keep her under the control of some man. And it is heartbreaking to think that this system that could offer, that does offer hope to so many, has been used to oppress a whole group of people, women. It's heartbreaking to know that I had a 17-year marriage, and at the end, I found out the only thing he cared about was money. That was it. The whole thing was about money. All those years of Bible study, all the church attendance, all that was about money. That was it. And it's going to be either money or sex or control or maybe all three. You're going to find that in every case. After you'd realize that you can't save him because that's the work of the Holy Spirit in that system of belief, the Holy Spirit and the person is the only thing, the only two parties that can do anything. You, as a human being, are not in that position, and that is not being obedient to think you can be the Holy Spirit in a person's life. So that's something you have to be. Recognizing that's pride. Women take a great deal of pride and are told by society it's your job to make that relationship work. By definition, relationship is two people, but you're told you alone can make that relationship work. That lets him off the hook totally, which is what he wants. So you cannot do that. It's your job to honor your relationship with God. And when I realized I couldn't stay in the situation and be angry every day, and have a relationship with God that I wanted, then I knew I had to leave. And then I saw the damage it was doing to my children. So after you decide or realize that's God's job, it's not your job, you can pray for him and not live with him. You can forgive him and not live with him. You do not have to be subject to him to be a Christian. A lot of women want to be a good Christian wife. What does that mean? That means not thinking, not feeling, doing whatever he wants. I don't see that in Jesus' words. I don't see it. So after you decide this is not for you, then you have to think, what am I going to do? What does God want me to do? And that's when you start exploring, getting information about the syndrome, finding more support. You will find support. The last level is identifying your needs. What therapy needs do you have? What financial needs do you have? What support needs do you have? What do your children need? Those kinds of things. Probably you need to go to work. I was blessed in having the education because then I could have the job that paid me. Even though it was teaching, it was still something we could live on, barely, but we could make it. Because he took my entire salary, all the summer's checks when I left. I had it in a separate account, and he went and talked to the teller and got all the money. It was about $3,000 at that time. That's what I was going to leave with, but it wasn't there. But I left anyway. We left anyway. We left with nothing. Nothing. But we made it. Because I know that God supplies. We had help with food. We had help with transportation. I had help with babysitting. There's a way. There's never a good time to leave, usually, but there's a way. And you just have to get inventive and creative about finding what you need. But you want to plan A, B, and C before you leave because you know him and you know what he could do. For example, I knew that my ex-husband was going to take the car. I had a job promised to me in 3 months, 20 miles away. So he's going to do whatever he can to try to keep you from being able to function. He took the baby for a little while. They do whatever because control is the main thing. However, I was blessed because after I got the divorce, my ex-husband always operated better in front of people than just with me. So I always had other people there. He couldn't fool the other policemen. He couldn't fool the other neighbors. He couldn't fool the other people. They had heard too much. They had seen him chase us across the street with a knife saying, I'm going to cut you in pieces before the cops get here. They had seen and witnessed this. So, no, he didn't want to be confined. So he wasn't going to do anything to lose his freedom. So then he just left us totally alone, which hurt the children because why doesn't daddy care about us? But he wasn't harassing us every day like some of the men do. It's not easy. Some women feel like when they get a divorce, he'll be better. No, he's not going to be better in the divorce than he was when you were living with him. So you have to make several plans so you have your fallback. But you know him. You know him. So prepare.
Wow.
Prepare.
Wow. Thank you for
Thank
sharing
you.
that. Thank you so much for sharing from your own experience and just the wisdom that you've learned, because I do think it's important, like you said, so many times when we're in an abusive context, they tell us that we can't think for ourselves, that we're not smart, that we don't know things. But like you said, we probably know the abuser better than anybody else. And so using that knowledge and information to keep yourself safe, to strategize, how am I going to, like, even what you said, if he's going to behave badly when you're alone, bring somebody with you. You probably know a lot about his movements and the way he manipulates. And I think it can be a way for some of us to regain our sense of autonomy and our sense of, hey, I know what I'm doing, when you can, like, think through, okay. And strategize sometimes with a professional of like, how can I leave? How can I get safe? And also, what is he likely to do or not do that I can be prepared for? That's really important. And I'm curious, One of the things that you mentioned earlier in the conversation, and I thought this was interesting, I don't think we've ever talked about this on the show, but you had mentioned how sometimes domestic violence prevention centers, abuse prevention centers, a lot of times they're funded by churches. And I've seen some where they are actually just like a Christian-run organization, but even some of the ones that aren't, you'll see from time to time that churches will give big donations to certain organizations that aren't even affiliated with them. Do you feel like there's a reason behind them doing that? Is that to make themselves look better? Is that to be able to control the agency? Is that out of the goodness of their hearts? What have you seen is the reason churches often fund organizations, but then themselves are not safe places?
I've heard a pastor tell me it wasn't his business and that they give money to the shelter, but it is your business. If you're not preaching truth about this, if you're never telling anyone in your congregation that this is wrong, and you're responsible for what you teach. And as you know, there are very few sermons about abuse. And remember, abuse doesn't have to be violent. Some women feel like I'm not abused because he doesn't hit me. No. Is that the ceiling? Is that the ceiling for your relationship? Is, gee, at least he doesn't hit me? I have heard many women say that. At least he doesn't hit me. So the other reason women feel that they're not very strong is because you're donating your entire being and life to everyone else. You're giving away your strength. You're keeping everything going. If you stopped, none of this would hold up the world. Of course, they don't want us to think that we have anything on the ball, because they're going to lose big if we stop giving. If we take that away, it's going to hurt. So you are strong. You're stronger than, but you're giving it away. And you're giving it away a lot of times to people who are going to use it against you.
Wow. That's a good insight. And I'm also thinking about how a lot of times things come down to money for churches as well. Like you said, the power, the sex, and I'm trying to think of the other one you mentioned, control and money. What I have seen in a lot of churches is that at the end of the day, it is all about the money, same as like individual abusers many times. And women make up a large majority of most congregations. I think I heard a statistic that it was more like 75% women, 25% men, something like that. And oftentimes women are the ones that are writing the checks out for the tithes and not their husbands or the men in the church. Maybe coming from the same bank account, but women are often the ones who are actually writing out those checks. I feel like that's another way women can take their power back, is by putting their money where their mouth is and saying, hey, I'm not going to donate to organizations who don't empower women, who actually support the oppression of women. And again, whether you're the one who technically made the money or not, if you're the one stroking the check and you get that deciding thing, like, there are a lot of organizations you can give to that actually do empower women. Before we go, I wanted to ask you what some of your favorite tools are for survivors who are like currently in an abusive environment, particularly women within these religious constructs. You talked about the different levels of confusion. If you have any favorite tips or tools that you really feel like you want to share today, that would be really welcomed.
In the book, you start out with charting. It gives you detachment. It helps you see. You record the behavior, and I give you ways to categorize it. One thing I learned in the Master's in Counseling and the Master's in Communication was communication games. And you have to stop thinking in terms of what he says and look at what he does. Then you look at the payoff. What does he get out of this? What do you get out of it? There's a pattern. When you start charting, you see the patterns. That's when you realize this is deliberate. This is a deliberate game. So after you chart, I have guided journals for you to do, to start sorting out. And then we move into redefining and relabeling behaviors. We stop accepting their definition of what this is, and we start looking at what it really is. For example, there are phrases such as, What is it about my not doing the dishes that makes me a horrible wife? Challenge those global insults. And of course, I list the verbal abuse categories in the Bible verses, some of the Bible verses that are used to verbally abuse us. Accusations, name calling, a lot of things, gaslighting, a lot of things. Then we have the assertive training. We have a little approach, a little introduction to assertiveness training. You're not able to do that at the beginning, but if you build up a little bit, you can start role playing it yourself. Find a friend and start role playing it. But just be aware that when you start being assertive, he's going to escalate and be prepared for that. But when you learn assertive training, that's great when you get out into the world because you'll be able to use it without somebody pulling a gun on you. Again, the workbook helps you get free of guilt so that you can live knowing this is God's will for you not to be abused, for you to be able to exercise your gifts and power. Secondly, the workbook helps you not re-engage when you get out. Many women feel very vulnerable and are tempted to re-engage with users. Users look for givers. Women are givers. So you learn to test it really quick and find out really quick. Even though they're very skilled, you can find out. So you're not tempted to get re-engaged and re-abused. And then resources like Courage 365. Learn to trust your gut. Learn to trust your intuition. Honor your relationship with God or the spirit within you or whatever you call it, because abstract systems of abstractions are used by manipulators. And if you don't get clear concepts, you don't have the weapons you need. And that's when the redefining and relabeling comes in. Take apart, challenge. What's the data? What I call data is what you can see and feel and hear. What's the data behind this label that you're giving me?
Absolutely.
And of course, confusion is the main tool to keep you confused, keeps you spinning. And while you're spinning, he does whatever he wants. So your task is to sort through the confusion, get clear, and strengthen yourself.
Wow.
And the workbook will help you do that. Just realize that if he's keeping you upset and confused, that's the payoff. I had my friend's husband told her, "I enjoy getting you upset.
Wow.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I feel good when you're upset."
Wow. What a
Because
power trip.
it's
Yeah.
power. Yeah, it's power. And until men stop defining themselves as men by what woman they control and start getting another definition of manhood, we have this problem.
You're so right. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I know that's going to be so useful to so many people. And I think you're right. I think women taking their power back, listening, trusting themselves, making safe action plans, and men realizing that manhood is not related to who they can control and have power over, that just makes a huge difference, all the difference in the world, honestly. The last question we like to ask our guests on the show is one of my favorite questions, and it is, what does courage mean to you?
Courage is to be yourself. It's the hardest thing in the world to be. E.E. Cummings wrote a wonderful poem about it, how the whole world works against you being yourself. So
Oh.
choosing your own well-being is the hardest thing in the world, and it feels very lonely. But you have to change your playmates, like it says in AA 12 Steps. Change your playmates. If you're not getting support, there are people out there who love you for who you are and won't demand that you fit into their little bitty tiny box that has no air. And I just want to put a plug in, of course,
Yes.
the RB Thriver Grant. Once a year, a reader can apply. Actually, you can apply all year. But once a year in October, we award a grant up to $1,000 because financial abuse is so prevalent. Taking the money away is one of the first things they like to do. We try to give a grant to someone trying to start over to be used for needs. We do not use it for lawyer's fees, but we'll use it for education or housing or transportation or something that's needed to help the woman get started again.
Wow. That's so incredible. I love that so much. And tell us where we can find your book.
Oh, it's on Amazon and Kindle, but you can find it on my website. The link to buy it on my website, shirleyfessel.com is my website with the blog. And please sign up with your email for the blog and you will get special updates that other people don't get.
Ooh, I like that. That's so great. Is there anything else you'd like to share as far as where people can find you? You're on Twitter and Facebook.
Right. It's under either Shirley Fessel or some variation of Fess Up or it's Redemption from Biblical Battering. You can get me the both ways. And by all means, contact me if I can help. Some of the courts in the conservative states now, it's very challenging, especially if there are children involved. And we do try to network and find the best resources for women. But I'm here and Ashley's here and you're not alone.
Absolutely.
You're not alone. You're not the first. We hope you're the last, but you're probably not going to be the last.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all in this together. Thank you so much, Shirley. You've been a wonderful guest. I appreciate your wisdom and just that you've created this workbook for Christian women leaving abusive environments. It sounds so, so valuable and really grateful and honored to have you on our show. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. This is going to strengthen your faith. It's not replacing your faith. You're going to mature in your faith.
Thank you for that. And everybody, thank you for tuning in. Please be sure to check out Shirley Fessel's book and all of her social media. You can, of course, follow Courage 365 on all of our social media platforms, as you can see below. If you need help, you can go to our website, courage365.org, and click the Need Help tab. There is a list of all kinds of resources that you can have access to, including hotlines and such. One of my favorite resources that we have available to you, and we have many on the website, is our text message list. This is our daily inspirational text messages. We do these for free Monday through Friday. You don't get spammed. You don't have other people's text messages coming at you, just the ones from Courage 365. These are so empowering, and we've heard so many replies back from our audience just saying, thank you for this. This helps keep me going in the morning. It's a reminder of my courage and strength. All you have to do to sign up for these text messages is text the word courage to the number on the screen, which is 917-809-7311. Text the word courage to 917-809-7311. When you do that, you'll be automatically added to our list. We hope to have you join us there. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And as always, live with courage.